Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the three questions with Andy Richter. And I have a very, very funny, lovely, talented woman on the show today. It's Mary Holland of Wild Horses fame, of pretty much, you're one of those people that people are like, oh, yeah, I've seen her in a thousand things.
Oh, that's what a dream to be thought of as that. That's very fun.
Well, but I mean, don't you get that? Do you get that a lot where people are like, I know you from somewhere? And you're
yeah, like, I do. And that was always like the fantasy growing up of like being somebody that people were like, hey, I know your face from something, even if they couldn't like remember it right away.
Right.
It's great to have a memorable face.
No, yeah. And well, and also it means like, I mean, you're making a living doing this stuff, which to me is always like, that's
right.
It. That's
right. Like, exactly.
If you're making a living, wow. You know,
that's, I know.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
But I think, but do people too, because you have been in so, like, done guest spots on so many different things. Do you get people that want to, like, go through your whole resume to figure out what it is that they know you from? Because I get that sometimes. Like, if they don't know me from the Conan show, and they're like, no, I don't ever watch that.
That's not it.
And I'm like,
Nothing will make you feel more embarrassed, I think, than having to try to guess what somebody
it's
has
the worst.
Seen you
it's
in.
It's the worst.
Well, and especially, like, an example that comes to mind is like if I'm in a Lyft or something, and the driver is like, oh, I recognize, or what do you do for a living? And I would say, oh, I'm an actor, and they'd be like, oh, what would I have seen you in? What have you done? And that to me is just, I totally know that it's a question that comes from like, he's just curious about like.
Yeah.
What I do.
Right.
But the anxiety it gives me to be like, okay, now I gotta guess what maybe he's seen and like, or I have to like list things that I've done. It just feels very embarrassing.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, it doesn't happen so much, but for a while too, there were like times when I would know just based on the demographics of the person asking, like what they know me from. Like there's a very different thing. It's definitely like teenagers, it was mm-hmm. always like, I was in Scary Movie 2. And they're like, that's it. You know, because
yes.
Like if I say like to a teenager, like I was in Arrested Development, most of them are like, I don't know what that is.
But yeah.
Like that or the Olsen Twins movie. For a while it was
Olsen,
like,
which Olsen Twins movie?
I was in their big screen, you know, because they made a million movies of their own.
I loved every single one of them.
Yeah.
They were so good.
Right when they were of the age where girls who had been enjoying them were getting tired of them, they
yeah.
made a major motion picture in which I appeared.
Wow.
So
what
yeah,
was your role?
It was called, well, the show, it was called New York Minute. And I am waiting to be canceled for this. Because
oh, no.
I play the adopted son of the leader of the Chinese Tong. Is that what a crime family in the Chinese? I think it's a Tong.
Interesting.
It's like basically supposedly New York, but it was really Toronto. Supposedly New York.
Peek behind the curtain.
Supposedly New York's. like leader of the Chinese mafia was this woman that ran a nail salon, and I was her adopted son.
Oh,
and
okay.
I spoke with a like Charlie Chan accent.
Oh,
because that was the part was written to be like that,
right?
And
right.
Quite frankly, there was like you could do accents, and it was like no one knew to be ashamed of doing like crazy accents for a while. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I one could make the case I should have known and I should have said no. I but you know, it's like, hey, do you know like a Charlie Chan accent? And I felt like. Well, it's motivated, you know, she's the adopter. It's like, no, but why would I have a Chinese accent
growing
up
right.
in New York City, regardless of being
yeah,
adopted, you know?
And that's a great point.
So,
that's a great
but anyway,
point.
Anyway, cancel away. I did a terribly insensitive.
You have my permission
yes,
to cancel me.
I can't be any, you can't cancel me more than I've canceled myself. That's what's going to save me. But I did not bring you on here to talk about the Olsen twins. I mean,
oh, you
I wanted
didn't?
To.
I that's what I was under the impression we were going to be talking about
well,
for an
somebody,
hour.
It got out then. Now, you are an improv comedian, too. You never have done stand-up, right?
No. Yes. Strictly improv.
Did you set out to do comedy or did you?
I set out to be an Oscar-winning actress. That was my dream was to be
like Meryl Streep.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's really what I was going for. Growing up, I was all eyes on me. Whatever I could do to get all eyes on me, I wanted the attention constantly. And
so, arson? Did you ever do arson?
I did a lot
barns.
Of that's yeah, yeah. right, and I did, and guess what? It worked. I got a lot of attention
sure.
from it.
And you're not really hurting anybody if you get
no,
the animals out
I mean,
first.
No, it, well, I tried to, and that's what counts. Is you know, you just
is the effort
as long as you make an effort. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. I knew just in my bones that I wanted to be an actor all growing up, and. Be in movies and all of that. I had real stars in my eyes about that. And then went to like drama school, went to theater school, went to boarding school for theater when
yeah,
I was
that's,
in high
I was
school.
Gonna, you're from Virginia.
Yes.
And your folks are doctors, right?
Yes.
What kind of doctors are they?
They're radiologists.
Oh, really? They're both radiologists.
They're both radiologists.
Oh,
yeah.
I bet that was tense sometimes.
Oh, just- boy.
You're x-raying them all wrong.
That's it. They would constantly critique each other's x-ray. it is really interesting that I grew up in that kind of household because they're very pragmatic people. My mom really, well, they both have like a creative spirit, but they're very like, as you would expect doctors to be, you know, just very like logical, very left-brained. And I remember after school, sometimes we would get picked up from school by our babysitter, and she would drop us off at the hospital. And so I would spend a lot of time just wandering around our local county hospital.
Oh, wow. Is it were you in a rural area or kind of like in between?
Yes. Yeah. So I grew up in Galax, Virginia, which is
Galax. It's like galaxy with the Y cut off.
That's right.
What is that from?
It's we're named after the Galax leaf, which is like a tiny little like leaf.
Oh, okay.
If that explains
yes.
it.
I'm from Stinging Nettles, Virginia.
I don't remember why it's called that, but I do know I was looking up the history of Galax for some project or something, and I do know that it was originally going to be called Cairo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then they pivoted to Galax.
Right.
So, but yes, it's the world's capital of old-timey mountain music.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very exciting. They have an annual fiddlers convention that is just the social event of the season.
Right.
And they have like clogging competitions and banjo competitions. Like it is a big to do.
Now, is that when you're a kid, is that fun or is it like, oh, that corny old hillbilly music? Yeah.
No, it's so much fun because you really like it. It takes place in the local park. And the park just, there's like a stage that gets built and then there's like ice cream, you know, kind of carnival-y type food and stuff. And then the rest of the park is just filled to the brim with RV like campers and things. And there's a path that goes around the whole park. And what we would do as kids is we would like, and young teens, we would get in little clumps and we'd walk through this path and you're passing these RVs and people are like having jam sessions and you're walking with your friends. And I mean, that our town was so small and we were in the middle of the Blue Ridge Mountains. We were like, you know, very rural. And so the things to do around town were just to like walk around and encounter other teenagers.
Yeah, yeah. And the town I grew up in, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, let's go stand in the McDonald's parking lot. Yeah.
I remember there's this one, the cool thing that people would do on weekends is go cruising. Yeah. And that just meant you would get in a car and you would drive up and down like the 4-block stretch of Main Street. And you just pass other teenagers in cars.
Go slowly. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Go slow.
We had road parties. We called them road parties, which because it's the Midwest, it's Illinois, it's completely flat and it's all farmland.
Right.
And you could drive out into the, and all the, you know, and there were a lot of farm kids that knew like, oh, there's this road that no one ever goes down. And so we would, you know, like it could be 15 cars and
right.
kids would know where it was. And you just pull up and there were guys that had like speakers that they could hook up into their trunk so you could listen to, you know,
that's
Van Halen.
Fun.
And
just rock out, have a road party.
And just rock out and just sit in a ditch in the dark somewhere, basically.
Yes.
Drinking beer and listening to Janie's crying.
Just existing together.
Yes.
Just like, being in the world together.
Yeah. We need to drink beer.
Yeah.
Let's go do it out, like basically in flat nowhere and, you know, in the dark. And that's what we would do.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same experience. And we were, right in the sandwich in the Blue Ridge Mountains. So it's very beautiful around there. And there's also like, as you can imagine, so many back roads and twisty, windy, you know, you could really, really go have some alone time if you wanted to, just driving in the dark.
Were your folks from there? What brought them to the, you know, such a rural outpost?
So my dad was born in and grew up partially in Georgia and then went to college and stuff in Florida. And then my mom grew up in Virginia, not far from where Galax is. Mm-hmm. And they met at the MCV, Medical College of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And they fell in love. And
you say that with some resentment.
They fell in love. And I guess that's why I'm here.
And I'm the product of it. Doomed from the start.
Exactly. It just, I mean, right at the beginning, we're off on the wrong foot. My dad is 2 years older than my mom and graduated first. And he, I think, went and did his residency in Charleston, South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And my mom, when she graduated, joined him and they were working as residents. I could be getting this totally wrong, but they were working with a doctor, a physician who was like, hey, I'm going to Galax and you guys should come. And so they did. And it wasn't far from the town where my mom grew up in. Like it was just a few hours away. So I think she liked that idea of being close to her parents. And that's how we ended up there.
Do you think of yourself as Southern?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I do, yes. Galax is like right on the border of North Carolina. And like I went to summer camp in North Carolina. It, and that kind of mountainy Appalachian like vibe there, it's mm-hmm. it's very Southern. And all my friends had, you know, really thick accents. And my dad did as well. My mom didn't so much, interestingly. But yeah, I do think of myself as Southern.
What it now, and as you've gone through, obviously you left Virginia. And you
I did.
You, did you live in Chicago for a while?
I did. Well, I went to college just outside Chicago in beautiful DeKalb, Illinois.
Oh, Northern Illinois. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Okay. Okay.
That's right. You know, Corn Festival.
I know.
And now that's a social event of that season.
Now, well, we'll get back to that. But I mean, what do you think, like, do you feel like there's a separate identity from you and your Southernness compared to, like, Midwesterners you've, you know, met? Or, I mean, L.A.'s hard because everybody in L.A. seems like, almost everybody seems like they're from somewhere else. I mean,
yeah,
there's a totally. Few locals, but it doesn't feel like anything other that they exist in reaction to all the other people that aren't from here. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's nothing like, I don't think like, now that's a LA thing to say, because most of the people that are the grossest LA people are new here. You know what I mean?
Yes. That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's so true.
But what is the Southernness that you think that's, you know, different?
Well, I had two experiences in the Midwest. So I grew up in Galax and was desperate to somehow find my way into acting. I thought the way to do it was to go to Juilliard. I was like, that's it. That's the only way to do it.
Because you hear that.
You hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had no concept of how else one pursues it. But there did happen to be a woman from my hometown who was a few years older than me, and she went to Juilliard, if you can believe it.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, yeah, she's so great. And I cornered her. I think our families went to the same church.
Did she have a job or?
She was from Galax.
Oh,
and
I
remembered hearing that she went to Juilliard and stuff, and she was home for the holidays, and our families went to the same church. And so I went up to her and I was like, what, how and what?
Hey,
how
you.
And what? Hey, you. You help me get into Juilliard right now.
I want to make it to Broadway.
And she told me that she was like, well, I went to this theater school that prepared me for the audition for Juilliard. And she told me about the school, and it was Interlochen, which is like an arts academy in Northern Michigan. And
oh, so, yeah. I've heard of that. That's like fancy.
Very fancy. It's mostly, or at the time when it was initially founded, it was really renowned as a music. Mm-hmm. Their music program was
incredible. They have like a festival up there too. There's like Interlochen means a fancy concert series in the summertime too. In the Midwest. Yeah.
Yeah. The musicians there were so talented. But they... It did start out initially as like a summer camp, like in the 60s, and then became an academy. And so she was like, oh, I went there for my last year or two of high school. And so I was like, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. You have to get into this school, and then you get into Juilliard, and then you become, and then that's the only way you can become an actor.
Yeah.
And so,
And what was Interlochen? I mean, well, how long did you leave your junior year, your senior year?
I left I was there for my junior and senior year of high school. So I left Galax and went to Northern Michigan and was in it was really a shock to the system in so many ways, because my experience in Galax is a really small town. Mm-hmm. And I went to school with kids that I, like, we went from preschool all the way up to high school together. Like, same 30, 40 kids.
Yeah.
My experience of the world was so limited. And when I went to Interlochen, it was like, my mind was blown. Like, my horizons were just completely exploded. There were kids from all over the world and all different like backgrounds and like experiences and like super cool, really artistic, just all these amazing kids all together in this place in the woods. And it was just, it was, I feel like I just sort of like the southernness or the kind of mountaininess that I had sort of, I got very nostalgic for it. I like kind of cling to it in one way. And then in another way, I was like, I have to let that go. Because there's so much more out there.
Had you been itching to get out of Galax, or was it just kind of?
I just knew that I had to. Yeah. But after I left, I got so nostalgic for it. I think also at the time, after my first year at Interlochen, my parents decided to move from Galax. So they moved to just outside Nashville, Tennessee. And so I think that really influenced my feelings about Galax, where I was like, oh my God, this is my childhood and it's going away.
Yeah, it became like sealed in amber then because we didn't have any reason to go back there. Yeah.
But the Midwestness of it all, I didn't really experience that very much in Michigan, I think, because it was its own sort of bubble.
Yeah.
But in Illinois, for sure. Like, that was a...
Yeah, that's Illinois. Illinois is Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I imagine, I mean, I'm just projecting, but I can imagine, like, going to Interlochen was probably the first, you know, because I can only assume from, like, when I, growing up in a small town, going to, for me, the first real experience around, you know, theater type kids was I did speech team, you know, like, you know, our plays were really shitty. So I did speech team, which is like, for people that don't know, it's not just there's debate, but then there's also basically you go stand in the classroom and act in front of people solo.
Yes, I did that too.
Yeah.
We called it forensics.
Yeah, it's the same thing. We called it speech team, forensics. It's the same thing. Like the medals would say forensics, like if you won a medal, you know, and there would be meets. There would be meets and it would lead up to like a, you know, or whatever, like
state sectionals.
And then, and then state championship and you could win state.
Yes.
And I read prose. I read short stories, you know.
Oh, that's so fun. Yes, and I did that too.
Yeah, and I won a scholarship to speech team camp, you know, like a summer camp where basically it was like performing arts college, sort of, but aimed at speech team. I don't have any recollection of what the curriculum was. Like, I remember being there, and the main thing for me was just like being around, like, again, diversity.
Yeah.
Like being around like gay teens who are out gay teens.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
You know, and as ridiculous as it is, like Jewish kids. Like I just was never around Jewish kids until.
Totally.
You know, until I got older. It just was, you know, and that was the same kind of thing. Like, oh, yeah, right. This is like, you know, and now, I mean, my life is just lousy with gays and Jews. Just too many, to be frank. Of both. Sometimes they're one and the same. I got some gay juice.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Well, I'm going to head out. this was nice.
This was nice. No, but I imagine, like, especially in northern Michigan, like, it's probably still feels like camp. Is it very campy and woodsy?
Very campy. Oh, yeah. It's right on the lake. It's, like, it's very, very campy and woodsy.
And so you're, like, in a bubble, you know?
Totally.
Yeah,
and we were also like Interlochen itself is a tiny, tiny little town in Michigan. And Michigan as like if you travel outside the like property of Interlochen, you it's so hard to believe it's in that those both of those like environments exist in the same location because very conservative. Like Michigan is like really, and there, I don't think many of the local people in and around Interlochen, I don't know this for sure, but I think our sense as students there when we would go out in the world was that there was a lot of like art school, like they were not into it.
right.
But that was my experience too of just like, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much more to the world. And I was just plunged in, a totally, totally new environment. But very much a bubble, very much a bubble. Yeah.
And what took you to Northern? Why pick Northern of all the Northern Illinois universities?
Northern
Illinois.
We call
it Northern in Illinois. You call it. Yeah. There's Northern, there's Eastern, there's Western, and there's Southern.
That's right.
And
then all the directions.
There are. They caught them all covered.
They caught them all covered, which is so nice.
And, but Western Illinois, like I didn't know anybody that went to Western, but I knew kids who went to Southern. Southern was a party school.
Yes.
My brother went to Eastern, which was like Eastern and Northern seemed to be very similar, just one was closer to Chicago. Like DeKalb is not that far from Chicago. Like
no.
Not far
at all. And that was when I first dipped my toes into improv. I did the improv intensive at IO.
Uh-huh.
The summer between my junior and senior year of college.
And what year is that?
That was 2006.
Wow.
That summer.
I am old.
Me too.
I was trying to think, wait, I wonder if there's any overlap, if there's anyone. No. Everyone that I knew is dead now.
They're all dead.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I'm the last improviser from my era.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're thrilled you're here. I did.
So why Northern? Why Northern?
Oh, why Northern? That's right.
Yeah.
Did I audition for Juilliard? Yeah.
Oh boy.
Did I get in? No.
We'll be right back with more Three Questions.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
So, part of the Interlochen Theater program is your senior year. You go to this, we would take like a group field trip to these auditions called the Unified Auditions. And at the Palmer House Hilton in Chicago, what would happen? I don't know if this is still how it's done. But what would happen is all of the like... conservatory acting training programs around the country and some out of the country would each of the schools would like have a room at the Palmer House Hilton, a conference room, and they would just, you would like sign up, you get an audition time, and they would just see like tons and tons of kids coming through and auditioning. But it was nice because you could like bang out like you can audition for like 20 schools in over the course of a weekend. So we did that, and I auditioned for all these different schools. And then I really liked the, and Northern Illinois has a BFA acting program, and it was the like head acting teacher of that program was a very renowned Meisner teacher. Her name was Catherine Gately, and people would, she like formed this program at this school, and people were really into her program. And so I auditioned, and then the woman I auditioned for, Deborah Robertson, who's like the movement teacher at NIU, I really liked her. Like we got along really well, and Northern wasn't on my radar at all. And then I went and visited, and I sat in on some acting classes, and how I envisioned how Juilliard was, like where there's so much like budget and resources. Even Interlochen was like that. The theater was so beautiful, and our classrooms were like gorgeous, and it just had a ton of funding and resources to make the facilities really nice. And at Northern, it's like it's a public university, and the theater department didn't have a ton of resources. Was like, I remember our acting class was in this like lower level room that was so dark and dirty. I feel like they discovered that building later got torn down because they discovered asbestos everywhere. Like it was like it was really bad, and we shared a hallway with the anthropology department. So it was very much not like what I always fantasized theater school was going to be like.
Right.
But
yeah, but there were probably some really hot anthropologist dudes walking around.
Oh my gosh, the hottest. The hottest. Yeah.
You want to dig for some bones over here, buddy?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh, I know what it means.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, so but this teacher was so great, and the program seemed really great, and so that's what brought me there. That Meisner training.
Now, when you say Meisner training, what does that mean? I mean, just you don't have to get into the atomic details, but just what in
fade
generally
in.
Speaking,
huh? I said fade in, like I was about to read you a whole screenplay.
Right. Right.
So the general idea, it's actually aligns with improv really well, because the whole philosophy behind it is active listening, being in the moment, not pre-planning anything, really working off your partner, whatever they're giving you, that informs how you say your next line, that being affected by your partner in the moment in that way.
That's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And the first year or 2 years of the training, we never touched a script. Like it was all just working on being present with another person on stage and communicating what you're getting from them and how they're making you feel. And that's what, if you've heard of the exercise repetition, that's like what that does. Is it like you would say to me, you have a gray sweatshirt, and then I would repeat that back to you, and then you'd say it again to me, and I'd repeat it back. And the point is not the words. The point is like what I'm getting from you when you say you have a gray sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, you have a gray sweatshirt, and then internally I'm like, whoa, he seems like annoyed by me or something. And so will inform how I say I have a gray sweatshirt back to you.
Yeah.
So that's the idea, that you do repetition for a bit, and then you start like incorporating character, and then you start incorporating intent, and then you start incorporating scripts.
Okay.
Yeah. But a lot of improv.
Because I was going to say, I mean, because I don't, I mean, I get paid to act for a living, but I learned how to act from going to film school and then doing improv. And you know, you kind of learn to act in improv while you're figuring out something to say.
Yeah.
So the acting kind of becomes, you just get used to committing and saying things and being that person.
Yes.
And then and there are techniques with film acting that you learn. And I was lucky enough to get work. And then I, you know, working was where I learned how to do it. So when people say, oh, I went to Stella Adler, I went to Meisner, you know, I don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And well, I took a couple theater classes in college and did not respond to them well. I mean, improv was much more like
totally.
When you say 2 years before you touch a script, that would have made me bananas. That would have I would have been like, what?
Another what am one? I doing here?
Yeah, yeah. Another one where we're trees today? What?
It was a lot of that.
Yeah.
But what I do, I completely agree with you that a lot of the actual training of like being a film or a television actor happens just in the experience of doing it.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that you can really be taught. You just right. kind of have to like learn it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
with improv, you go to classes and yeah, you learn the rules, and the rules are important and you stick to the rules. But you don't learn anything until you're on stage in front of strangers, really.
Right.
Really, you know,
you just got to do it.
Yeah.
But I do feel there were tools that I was given in that training that I really like. I do draw from today, and I think that one thing that when I found improv, it completely. I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This.
Oh, good.
This is like.
I was going to ask how hard, you know, how did you go from this aim, you know, this years long aim of being a fancy Juilliard actor right. to then being, you know, in a t-shirt and jeans, you know, in the basement of somewhere with six other people and eight people in the crowd, you know,
right.
mean, being funny, you know, I mean, how does that. Are you just you? Did you just say bye, Juilliard? As soon as you know, or that kind of notion of that? I just say,
yes.
You know, once improv started, you just knew like, oh, this is so much more fun.
It really ties in with generally what I've learned being in LA and having lived here for like 13 years now and pursuing this career. When I found improv, one of the things that I loved so much about it was that it was just such pure creativity. It was mm-hmm. completely, I loved the collaborative part of it. I loved how like the more I committed and like really like acted the whatever character I was being, like fully brought all my emotion to it, like gave every part of myself to the scene, the more that was like rewarded. And it was funny. It was funny because I was really playing it as like real and with the depth of emotion that I would do in acting school or whatever. And I had so, it was so fun. I had so much fun doing it. And when I moved to LA and continued to improvise, and I would simultaneously, I had an agent and I went out for auditions. I never got anything. And I really had, that's where like this notion, this like fancy Juilliard, like, oh, I want to like be in movies. I want to do this. I want to be a really like serious actress. I had to let that dream not go, but just loosen my grip on it a bit mm-hmm. because I hadn't like no idea how I was gonna get there.
Yeah.
There was no path, and I was enjoying improv and that community and the friends I was finding there and like that creative outlet so much that I did sort of have a reckoning where I was like, well, there was a shifting of the goalposts, I think, where I kind of let that, the lifelong dream I've had of being this fancy actor, let that go and just be present in what was happening.
Yeah. Well, also because you make those decisions when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And then you get older and you realize, like, I'm not so sure that's what I wanted to do anyway. You know what I mean? And that happens throughout your whole life. You know, like, what I want to do now is different than what I wanted to do 10 or 15 years ago. I mean, it's, you know, or what's important to me or what I really want to follow, you know, is like, it always is evolving. So.
Right. And your expectations, that is like another big lesson is like your as much as you can try to, just be loose and free with your expectations because things will never be like what you expect them to be like. And that can't be something that holds you back or is a depressing thing. It's like, I had these expectations of like, oh, I'm gonna, and then I'll go to Juilliard and then I'll do the thing and then I'll do it and then I'll have my dream. And what actually was my dream was revealing itself to me gradually and wasn't like this expectation that I had in my head.
Yeah. How do you get from DeKalb to Hollywood?
Driving.
We'll be right back. There, that's another good one.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're cooking on these commercial
breaks. That's a laugh line. You got to get out on those. I've watched a fella do that every now and then.
Great. So we did part of the theater program at Northern Illinois was we would do showcases for the graduating seniors would do a showcase for agents. We did one in Chicago and then in New York and in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Fancy pants. That's pretty cool.
It was really cool. Yeah. Because also my BFA class, our graduation lined up with the MFA class that was graduating and the MFA class, they were super, they had it all together and they got the funds together for us to also go to New York and LA. That was all them helping us organize that. So, I auditioned in LA and then an agent came to that showcase and I met with him while I was out here and he was like, come on out. And so I did. And
do
so
you
I,
just read? Do you do monologues? Do you do scenes? What are they?
Yeah,
doing to
it's a combination of like of scenes and monologues.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever.
So you came out here with an agent.
I did. You came out. I did.
Now, when you got here and you would like run into other hopefuls, were they like, "Fuck you, getting here with an agent already set up"? How dare you?
How dare you? Well, I didn't really know anybody out here. Two kids from my my class, my BFA class, also moved out here, but we were in totally different parts of the town, so I didn't see them very often. But the first like friend group I had was through an acting class that my agent recommended I sign up for because it's Meisner based like cold reading class, and. So in that class, it was all like working actors. Mm-hmm. So they it was old hat to them.
Oh, I see.
To have an agent,
right?
But I felt that I was like, oh my god, I felt so lucky to.
It is you are
have
I mean,
representation.
You certainly were because it's not usual to have to move to LA with an agent,
right?
Out of college. That's like really, really great.
Yes.
And so how did you find UCB out here? Did you just, you knew like, oh, improv, Chicago?
I lived in an apartment building close to UCB Franklin.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I would see the line out there and I never made the connection in my head of like, I knew what Upright Citizens Brigade was, the Comedy Central show, but I didn't know what this theater was. And then my friend and I went and saw a show there and I was like, oh, this is improv. This is what the thing they do in Chicago. And I got very excited and signed up for classes. And then it right away was like, oh, yes, this is where I'm to be.
Yeah, there UCB is really so, I mean, I was a tangential part of it because when the four of the original members who, you know, were the UCB moved to New York, I knew Besser and Walsh. I've never met Ian or Amy, but they came to New York and I was like one of their friends in New York and I did monologues for them 1,000 times. And my ex-wife and I lived when they got their first theater on, what was that, 22nd Street? My ex-wife and I lived two doors down the street.
Oh, wow.
And there was like a couple years in New York where we had joint Christmas party or like New Year's Eve parties. Like
that's
there'd be
fun.
A party at the theater and then also up at our apartment.
Oh,
and we kind of,
cool.
You know, like people going back and forth.
Yeah.
There were drugs involved.
I hate that. And now I hate that.
Wait a minute. Planned Galax. No drugs in Galax.
That's right. No drugs in Galax. I can say that's a fact.
But I really am so proud of those guys for coming, you know, for young people going to New York. And now they have basically the most vital improv school in the country. You
right.
know, like, definitely. Like, I think the best work of the last, for sure, 10 years of improv theaters is from those guys, you know?
Yeah, it was absolutely, finding that community was a lifesaver for me. And I think a lot of people feel that way because you are really leaving a school sort of environment where you have a built-in community and you have built-in creative projects and pursuits. Like, we're doing this production in the spring and you have scenes, you do an acting class, and you're all of that's like set up for you. But when you move to LA, none of that is set up for you. You can like pay to take acting classes, which is nice, but you don't have that sort of, I will definitely have a show that I'm doing in spring.
And
you don't have that built-in community. You have to find that for yourself. So UCB was definitely that for me. And also the fact that constantly just getting to do shows and no matter where they were, they were in a basement or they were like in someone's yard or whatever, it was so fun and it was so creatively fulfilling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When do you start? Like, do you have to get a day job when you come out here?
Oh yeah. I had a whole bunch.
Yeah.
I had a whole bunch. My first job was a hostess at a restaurant in Beverly Hills. Oh God, I just had a memory. So this restaurant, very fancy, and they wanted the hostesses to be equally fancy. And I'm not fancy. I don't know if you.
It's a very nice gray sweatshirt.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm not Beverly Hills fancy. That doesn't come naturally to me. And I remember one time.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
One time,
yeah.
The manager had a meeting with all the hostesses and he made a comment that I was like, I think this is specifically targeted to me. He said, now listen, some of you do a great job. You show up here, your hair is done, your makeup's done. And some of you, it looks like you just rolled out of bed. And I was the only one who fit that description. So I knew that was me. I had like kind of weird.
You were in pajamas
hair.
At the time.
Yeah.
In footy pajamas.
I was holding my teddy bear and I was asking for a glass of milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't, I worked there actually for a while, and then I tried to be, and I was a daytime bartender at that restaurant.
Mm.
I wanted to be a nighttime bartender because that you can make a lot of money
good
doing
cash.
That.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
cash. But they never, they, again, I don't think I was fancy enough. They never promoted me to that. So I quit there. I was a dog walker for a long time. I worked for a dog walking company.
That's good.
Yeah. And then I just did various other like one-off jobs, some other restaurant jobs. Yeah. Dog walking, I think, was like my main source of income for a while. Yeah.
And when do you finally start to kind of, as we talked about initially, make a living at this? Like, when are you starting to kind of, what are like, yeah. what's like the first big thing to happen where you're like some cash and this is, you know, and also when you're starting out like that, you're constantly, at least I can only speak for myself, constantly plagued by the, okay, when am I going to have to quit on this? When am I yeah. going to have to go like, all right, I'm going to get a job in advertising, or I'm going to, you know,
right.
sell cars or whatever, you know?
I think this sort of goes along with the whole letting go of expectations thing, because I really, I could not let myself think about, well, what does the next, what happens in 5 years, or what does the next even year look like?
Yeah.
I was sort of, I just got into a sort of protective mode of like, this is what I'm doing today, and I'm not even thinking about like,
yeah,
where future income is coming from.
Yeah, it's healthy compartmentalization.
Yeah,
yeah, yes. It's life saving.
It's life
compartmentalization. Yeah, yeah.
And so I didn't really have a plan. I did start like coaching improv. I started teaching improv, and that was great. And then I got the first role I got. I got a job in a regional Cheerwine commercial, which felt great being
Cheerwine.
Somebody
from. Sure. Being from, yeah. That's right near home. Yeah.
That's right. And so that was very exciting. But that maybe was like $500 or something.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was not,
yeah, yeah.
Could not sustain for long. And then I got a part in Silicon Valley. That was the first TV job I ever got.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Was that the first season or?
That was the first season. And yeah, I show up towards the end of this. It was just one episode. But that sort of, it felt like it like broke the seal or something. And, mm-hmm. Because then I started, it's also like coincided with doing shows at UCB and meeting people and like, you start to see like, oh, it feels so much more accessible because your friends are the ones who are like making shows and doing like it felt like being in the UCB community was a big part of how I got like how I met people and how people knew what I could do and would bring yeah. me in to do a thing.
Yeah.
So then that started to pick up a bit. I did a Cascade commercial, which was huge. That
right.
was the first like, oh my God, this is what this is what and can also happen.
Those good national commercials. I don't know if it's the same anymore, but I know when I was starting, there were people that would like, hey man, I got a Crest toothpaste ad. I'm set for the year. Like they could quit their waiter job.
Yeah.
Just based on what that would do for them. I think the pay structure is different now.
It is.
because television is so different.
Yeah.
But in those days you could get one of those things and it would just you'd be set. Yeah, you get, and especially if it was a commercial that ran for years and years, you know.
Right.
So yeah, Cascade Aid, like when you like is the Cascade commercial like can you quit dog walking? Can you quit do it? Like did that sort of
I think that I sort of tapered off with dog walking and then that company eventually disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But I did taper off of the dog walking and I was also like I was on a house sketch team at UCB, so I was like really putting a lot of time into that and
yeah.
Our house improv teams and practicing and coaching. I was really running around doing a lot of improv stuff and living off that Cascade money. And also I was sharing a studio with my boyfriend at the time. So we were our rent was very affordable. I could really make that money last for a while.
Right. That'll keep a relationship together.
Whew. Yeah. It oddly was so romantic.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Even though the only place, this studio was so small, the only place to sit was on the bed. Yeah. Like, we had no, that's where we ate dinner. That's where, it was like that kind of. But it was very exciting because it was like, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm like.
Right, right.
That was my work. I
right.
And my work is created. I'm like going around and doing improv. It felt great. It felt like I realized then that I was like, this is the dream. I'm living yep. the dream.
When you get that paycheck, it's just like, oh my God, you can do this for yeah. a living, you know? Because you do it for so long for nothing other than the fun of it. And I mean, and at least for me, like, I never had any solid game plan. I just was kind of like, yeah, this is fun. And I see other people kind of making a living at this. And I understand that's a possibility.
Right.
But then once you get like, you're like, oh my God. I mean, for me, it was doing a live show. It was like, oh my God, I'm making enough money. I'm certainly doing as well as I did with the piecemeal waiting tables, working for a moving company,
right.
You know, putting together lockers for my uncle kind of, you know, income that I had before that. So yeah, it's something super powerful about getting paid for the thing that you do for free just because you love doing it.
And it's yes. fun. Yes. And having that all with the backdrop of going to shows every night, pretty
yeah,
much.
Like, yeah.
It felt so, I felt so alive,
yeah.
so vibrant.
And it gives
great.
You the, honestly, I mean, now, you know, in my 50s, it is like, I had the kind of youth that you know, like I had a really fun youth that was full of lots of, and I, you know, and aside from like, oh, I was hanging out with people that now are, you know, now are famous or successful or whatever. That's like secondary to just like, oh my God, the fun that we had.
The fun.
Just the fun
yes.
and the laughing. So
the
much
laughing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
making, and also like the audience is having so much fun and you're also having so much fun with the people you're on stage with. It's just, it's such a high. It's such
yeah.
a positive experience. And I had that same kind of reflection of like, I was thinking about my 20s, which were flawless.
I think that's well known.
I made no mistakes.
Yeah.
But I think about how lucky I was that I got to be in this community where we celebrated each other and made each other laugh. And it's just so freeing. And then also making other people, like having people come to the show, audience members making their night better by laughing. It was just, mm-hmm. it's so, you do feel like so excited that you really lived life to the fullest is
yeah,
what
yeah.
it feels like.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Now, you, pretty early on in getting work, you were a series regular on, I forget the name, the Patrick Stewart?
Yes, Blunt Talk.
Blunt Talk. And yes. He plays sort of like an irascible talk radio guy, yeah?
Yeah, he's like a British, like, journalist. He was based on, or inspired by the movie Network and that character, you know that movie?
Yeah, sure. Howard Beale.
Yeah. So, and it was from the brain of Jonathan Ames, who is such an amazing writer, has such a unique sense of humor. So yeah, I was so thrilled to be on that show.
And that was pretty, was that one of you, like, is that an early job to get paid for?
It was an early job.
Yeah.
And initially, actually, I auditioned for this, a series regular role in it, and it like did a callback and came close to it, didn't get it. And I was so devastated because that's the closest I had gotten to anything like that. And yeah. I had been up to this point, just to really paint a picture for you. I had been auditioning for 8 years and had never gotten a single thing.
Wow.
Nary a thing. And I went out for hundreds of things.
Yeah.
So getting that close was very exciting. And when it didn't work out, it was a bummer. But then a few weeks later, they were like, they're adding another part and they want you to play this part. It's not a regular, but you'll be in most of the season. And so me and Karin Soni, his part, we were like sort of a duo or whatever in this world. And he and I went through that together the first season. And it was initially picked up for 2 seasons because it's Patrick Stewart and it's Jonathan Ames. I mean, so that was cool knowing there was like a little bit of somewhat job security. After the first season, they informed Karin and I that they were making us series regulars for the second season, which was great.
Yeah, that
was really exciting.
Does that really, like, do you feel like, okay, now that's it? Like,
Yeah. I cried so hard the day that when we wrapped shooting the first season. Yeah. I mean, I now think back on that and I'm pretty embarrassed because everyone else was like, okay, this job's over, go to the next job. And like, we all like each other and it's fun. But I was like, no, this is it. This is the end. This, for me, this is it. I don't know if I'm ever going to get another job like this. So I clung to it with the ferocity.
Yeah.
So much emotion. I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed when the first season was over. And then the next season was over and then it got canceled shortly after that.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, I imagine that's tough. No shit. I mean, I'm like, what was that like? I bet it sucked. You know, in fact, I know for a fact it sucked.
Yeah.
I know what that's like.
It did. And it was just very, I mean, in that sort of protective way of, I'm really not thinking any further ahead than like next week.
Yeah.
So when that ended, I was really like, okay, now that might be the only thing I ever get.
Yeah. It's a weird combination of privilege.
Yes.
And, you know, like your wildest dreams, you know, the gal from Galax.
Yeah.
The Galax gal. In Hollywood on a TV show. And you're really like, yep. That's it. And for me, when I was on series that seem, because, you know, they shift too. It seems when it's positive, it seems like, my God, this show is doing great. And then literally a day or two later, they'll be like, oh, these new numbers are not good. And you're like, what? You know?
Yes.
And you start to make plans in your mind.
When the show
is on and it's going, you start to make plans about what your life is going to be like. Because this thing's going to keep going. And then it doesn't. And then it's, you're like, while you're still in this space of privilege, you're scared fucking shitless.
Yes.
Because there's literally nothing in front of you.
No, it is a void.
Nothing.
It is a complete dark void. You have there's no assurance of anything, any kind of security or stability or income in any way.
Yeah. And all those plans, just, you feel like such a moron for having had, like, oh my God, I was thinking, about, like, you know, buying a house.
Yeah.
What was wrong with me, you know?
Yeah. And it's, again, that idea of adapting expectations, or you have these you just have to get into this mode of like, well, I expected this and now that's not happening. You just have to get so used to letting go of what you expected things to look like.
And especially, I imagine, too, this has happened to you, even within the work. You can never, I mean, one of the things that I've learned is don't hold on to anything too hard. Like, just be every single thing you do.
Yes.
Do not trust it at all.
No, no.
Just think that at any moment it could just vaporize.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. I think it sounds like, oh, that's not a very positive way to move through life. But actually it is, because nothing is so precious to you that you can't like grow away from it you're just so open and adaptable and able to like move and pivot to a different direction.
Yeah.
When you don't hold on. Like, I felt that way even just the auditioning process. I don't know if you felt this way, but I would get so nervous for auditions and I would spend hours preparing. I would go in, do the thing, torture myself for the next few days about whether it went well or not, and then find out I didn't get it and feel terrible.
Yeah.
And over the years of many years of doing that, I then learned, like, oh, the more I'm just like, well, whatever happens, like, if I have no attachment to what the result is going to be,
yeah,
I can be happy in my head.
Yeah. It's a crazy. It's like, I always think about, it's like asking someone to dance at a dance when you're a teenager. It's like the person that acts like they don't give a shit about dancing, they could take or leave dancing. If they turn off the music and the lights went on, they'd be fine to leave. Like, that is the sexiest person. That's the person that you want to dance with.
Right.
The one that doesn't give a shit about it. That's just like, yeah, I like dancing. Okay. And yeah, you know, or like, what's more attractive than someone who's not that interested in you? You know?
Exactly. Well, it's also there's just an ease about someone when they're, and that is easy to watch. You know what I mean? Like, that puts the audience at ease. The same is true in an improv audience. Like, if the audience is aware that the improvisers are nervous.
Tense, yeah.
They are very scared for them. Like, they don't get to just enjoy.
Yeah.
And when you feel like someone is settled and at ease, it's like, oh, great. Now I can really observe your performance and enjoy it.
It's a weird thing to not care, to spend so much time caring and thinking and stressing. And then you realize, like, oh, no, I'm caring and stressing and worrying over getting a job or being good at what, you know, like, it's kind of you. Put them together. I want to be good and I want to get a job. And then you realize, like, no, what actually makes my life better, and it has the appearance of making me more hireable, is being like, here I am. This is what I got. You say yes, that'd be great. You say no, you know, okay.
Right. I have Enjoy. Other things going on. Yeah, I don't, yeah. my identity doesn't hinge on this.
Yes.
Whereas the truth is it does.
Yeah, but it also, too, your identity hinges in, your identity isn't hinged to you as in a job. You know, like, say, like, when a show gets canceled, you're not thinking like, oh, my God, that job was me. And I know people in my life whose job are them.
Right.
Like, their identity is so tied up in their job. And it seems so dangerous. But that's also for me, from being in a very volatile industry. There's people, you know, I guess if you work for an accounting firm and you're a good accountant and the firm is strong, you can wrap your identity up in that. If
sure.
Because you're not going anywhere.
Crunch the numbers.
Yeah, sure. Right. Exactly. Whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
Crunching. I never hear the crunching. But I, it always seems like it's better to not care, to just have a light touch.
Just have a loose grip, have a light touch, have a light touch, and be adaptable.
Yeah.
Be water.
Okay.
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 And I'm the first person to ever say that. And
you are.
I'm the first and only person to ever say that.
Be water. Ruin hardwood floors. As much as you can. That's my advice to you kids. Now, in looking, because just kind of, you know, I did a Google on you. And I saw some, and I saw like some projects, like I saw an interview with you and Betsy Sodaro about a female arm wrestling movie.
Yes.
That, like, that was the world has been robbed of by COVID so far. Is that the case?
That is the case. That is the case. Yes, Betsy and I were in it's like a buddy comedy, buddy sports comedy about women's arm wrestling. We had the time of our lives making that movie, as you can imagine. Yeah, we had so much fun.
What's it called?
It's called Golden Arm.
Golden Arm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and Betsy's so funny.
She
Betsy's
is
one of the funniest people in the world.
I mean, she is out of this world funny.
Yeah,
she's so great. Yeah, and Maureen Barucha directed it, and we just had so much fun making that movie.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I saw was you play the voice of a droid.
That's right.
In a Star Wars game show for children? What the fuck is this?
It's a real, what a life. This, I don't know if you remember these shows from like the 90s, but Legends of the Hidden Temple and Guts and these like kids competition game shows. Did you?
No, I don't. I mean, I knew that like the slime one.
Whatever, oh, yeah. Double Dare.
Like like those ones kind of.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not aware of the other one.
They were really big for me growing up. That was like must-see TV for me after school, was watching these competition shows. And the guys who created this show work at Lucasfilm, and they were fans of those types of shows as well. And so they were like, what if we did one that takes place in the Star Wars universe? And so they created the Jedi Temple Challenge, the premise of which, and it's all like in canon, like it's all in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea is that the kids are young Padawans, and they come on the team, they come on the show in teams, and any relationship could be brother, sister, best friends, cousins,
yeah.
You know. And they go through, they have to pass a series of trials, and then at the end, if one team manages to make it through all three, they will become Jedi Knights.
Oh.
Very exciting. Wow.
And you're the voice of a droid.
And I'm the voice of a droid.
But you're not in the droid, are you?
Because
it's
no.
Just a humanoid, like there's a person in a costume.
There is a person in the costume. That's Gordon Tarpley, and he designed 83, which is the name of my droid, designed her, how she would look, and like built it himself, and he operates it. And mm-hmm. then, yes, and then I did the voice. And I played the droid companion to Ahmed Best, his Jedi Master, Kelleran Beck. And I'm like, we're like riffing with each other. You know, I'm like wisecracking and, you know.
Yeah. Are you on set with him talking, like just offset? And
yeah.
And the droid has to react to whatever you're saying?
It was a really interesting setup. I was in the control room where all the monitors were and all the like producers and writers and things. And I had a microphone that was attached to a speaker that was nearby Gordon.
Yeah.
So that Ahmed could like hear what I was saying and banter with me, and the kids would hear me too. But then also I had another microphone that went to a little earpiece in Gordon's ear where I would be like, okay, dance. And then I'd say something and then he would but we didn't do that very much. After a while it became much more streamlined where I would just we sort of got in a flow together where he like knew how to move when I would be talking.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was very strange being like
that's those fun weird gigs though. You
it
know?
Was so much fun. Yes. Yeah,
and especially if it's nice people. That's the other thing. It's like the people that you work with generally are nice, but there are sometimes when the set's kind of a bummer, and that's when it can be sort of like
right. No, these guys were so great. All the creators of the show were amazing. It was so much fun, and so much fun doing doing a job where you're surrounded by kids who are like really focused hard on like accomplishing a task.
Yeah. And super excited.
Super excited. Yeah, yeah. It's a very positive, very positive.
The contact experience. High you get from kids who are into something is just like the first time that you take your kid to Disneyland, it's just like, oh my God, this is it's better, I think, than going yourself, you know, like the contact high you get from your kid.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. It was, we had so much fun. So that was a great, job. I hope we get to do more.
All right. Excellent.
We'll see.
Yeah. What else have you got, you know, coming up? What COVID allows. And then also too, like, where do you, you know, what's your aspirations? And that doesn't even have to be showbiz wise. It could, you know, could be living on a houseboat in Amsterdam or something.
That's it.
Oh.
You just nailed
it. That's easy. All right. Well, thanks, folks.
Bye. well, what's coming up this holiday season is a movie that my friend Clea DuVall directed, and she and I wrote this movie together called Happiest Season.
And oh, right. Oh, yes, my God. I've heard about that. Yeah.
We're so excited for that to be coming out. I'm not quite sure how it's coming out. I know the original plan was a theatrical release, but, you know, what are movie theaters now? So I'm not, but it will be clear how you can access it.
And this is like a lesbian Christmas romance.
That's right. It's a romantic comedy, a Christmas movie. About a lesbian couple. And it's so much fun. It's really moving. I think it's such a perfect movie for right now. It's all about, you know, self-acceptance and family and connection, and it's just very joyful. It's a really happy movie.
And I bet you, I mean, unless it's a piece of shit, which I don't know. I mean, you never know. It could
you
be.
You never know.
no, but I
you
mean,
never know.
I bet you it's going to be like an incredibly important thing, you know, just like the word representation gets kicked around, but it's a very important thing. And I think that it's like, it just sounds like it's probably going to be really meaningful to a lot of people. So
I think it will be. And
good
I,
on you.
Well, thank you. It's also, I think, so cool that it is like a mainstream. It's a studio movie. It's telling this story, and it's so wild that there aren't already a ton of Christmas movies.
Yeah,
you know, romantic movies about gay couples. Like and so it feels really exciting that this is the beginning of, you know, hopefully there are so many more after.
Right. Something that's been due for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then, how was writing a screenplay like that and selling that? Was that something that you're like, is that just second to acting, or do you think like that could be something that you could very happily segue into?
I would be thrilled to, hold both.
I see.
One thing that was so fun, and I mean, the whole process of writing this with Clea was such a blast. And an aspect that was really special to me was the character we wrote for me. It was so much fun creating her with Clea and making these decisions about what she was like and what her dynamic in the family was like and what she would say. It felt really cool to be on that side of it as well as on the acting side of it. I really love that. So it does make me want to write more things for me.
Wow.
for me alone. it was very fun. And actually, Lauren Lapkus and I are writing a movie that we want to be in together. We're writing roles for ourselves. And so it's very fun. And it was something, it's writing, and especially writing a movie was so intimidating and daunting to me before Clea asked me to work on this project with her. And then in that process and that experience of writing with her, it felt so fun and accessible. And it was, you know, it's a lot of work, a lot of thinking.
Yeah.
You got to think about a lot of things.
I know. It's a bummer.
It, you know what? And I hate using my head. I hate it. But it felt so much more like, oh, I can do this. And I this is another means wherein I could be creative and,
yeah,
you know, and have fun. And yeah, so it was cool.
Well, we've now come to the part of the, you know, the part where you're supposed to sum it up. Wrap it up.
Oh God.
What have you learned? Like, what do you, you know, like, what's the point of your story here? Because frankly, I can't find one. It's been a mess.
No.
All over the map.
Oh my God. This is so embarrassing.
Oh, I feel like I interviewed 6 people.
Oh no. Well, I guess the message I want to leave your listeners with is, hey, listen up. Now listen.
They're listening.
Okay, great. Are you comfortable? If you're not comfortable,
get comfortable. This could take a while.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're buckle up. It's going to be another hour. I mean, I really think that the point of my story is, hey, you got to let go of expectations and be as unattached to results in any part of your life as you can be.
That's great.
Be in the moment and see what comes to you.
Yeah. Unattached to results is a great way to, and it's hard in what, and I don't know, you know, I was going to say in a results-based society, but we might just be results-based creatures.
Mm.
You know, I don't know if it's if you can put it off on one thing, but yeah, that's definitely the thing is that when you, if you're just focused on the results, you're missing what the important thing is, because ultimately, I mean, it's what you've experienced and it's how you felt going through all of it. That's really the point, you know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And if you're so attached, if you cling to results so much, you're just setting yourself up to constantly be disappointed because nothing ever goes the way you think it will. You know, it's all chaotic. And especially in this business, it's so unpredictable. You have no control over anything.
Yeah.
And so the sooner you can let go of the steering wheel.
Yeah. And let Jesus take it.
That's right.
As you go right into the ditch.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of cool teens hanging out there, so you're gonna have a good
time. And then when the cops come and they're like, "What? Why? Yeah. Why did you run over those pedestrians and drive into the ditch? Jesus took the wheel. Sorry. Good luck getting that guy in jail.
Yeah, yeah. Try to you know, put out an APB for Jesus.
Yeah, you'll have every hippie in town in here for a lineup. Well, Mary, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and talk with us today. I have nothing else to do, so it was really this might not even be recorded. This is just basically, yeah. You're spending time with a shut-in at this point.
Oh. Yeah. Well, great.
Good for you. You'll get your reward in heaven for this podcast.
I hope so. Do you have a voucher or something that I can like provide as proof?
I mean, she knows.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun talking with you.
I'm glad. I'm thrilled to talk to you. It's great to see you. I mean, I haven't seen you in ages.
Great to see you too.
And I hope the movie does really well. Tell me the name of the movie that you wrote with Clea again.
It's called Happiest Season.
happiest season. Mm-hmm. Look at that. Will you guys
go look at it?
Go look at it. Listen to it. Let it into your heart.
If you're going to look at it, it's important that you also listen to it.
Precisely.
Please.
All right. Well, thank you so much, thanks, Mary Andy. Holland. And thank you all out there for listening as usual. And I will have someone else next week. I don't know who.
Ooh.
A big, big love for you.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It's produced by me, Kevin Bartelt, executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Chris Bannon and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, associate produced by Jen Samples and Galitza Hayek, and engineered by Will Beckton. And if you haven't already, make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.